Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
16-year-old Nicole Russo left her home in Brick, New Jersey to spend the evening with her new boyfriend on Long Island. Someone her parents liked. Someone who'd eaten dinner at their table. She promised to call if they stayed the night, but the call never came. Days later, police found her Mickey Mouse backpack and traces of blood in his apartment, along with signs that someone had tried to clean it. This is her story.
Hi, I'm Vanessa.
And I'm Amy.
And you're listening to She Goes By Jane.
At the end of this episode and every episode, we will be joined by a special guest who will read an original poem by Amy Baker about the women we're featuring.
This week, we are joined by Elisa Donovan.
Hi, Vanessa.
Hi, Amy.
Vanessa, sometimes we chit-chat, but I don't have time for chit-chat today.
So you're basically telling me to just stay quiet?
Yeah, because this is... This case, to be clear, like, thoroughly wrecked me when I was researching
okay. And
writing the poem.
So is this the one you told me last week that you had one that you've been working on that was very emotionally draining?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, there have been...
There's been a couple, right?
Okay. I mean, it always is emotionally draining, and sometimes it just, like, hits in a little different way that I just have to sit with for a while. This one is...
Some have extra, like, ick involved, and I think that's what was happening.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So okay. We're just going to get...
I'm not sure what the ick is, but I know there was something extra.
Yes. We're going to get right into it, so...
Okay.
On the afternoon of Sunday, March 12th, 1995, 16-year-old Nicole Russo's new boyfriend stopped by her parents' house to pick her up. The plan was to drive from her home in New Jersey to his mother's home in Long Island. Though they just started dating, he was excited for the two of them to meet, and the plan to meet had been in the works for all week. As she gets ready, Nicole dons a dark-colored shirt, a gray skirt, white stockings, and some white sneakers before throwing on her dad's green silk jacket. She grabs a change of clothes, likely for the ride back or in case they end up staying overnight. But Nicole really wants to return home that night. She needs to be back in New Jersey so that she can be ready the next morning for her GED classes that she had just started taking. Just before leaving, she asks her dad how she looks. Her dad responds, "You look beautiful, honey." Nicole says goodbye, grabs her Mickey Mouse backpack. She's been carrying it everywhere lately. It's a replacement for a purse and sort of, for her, an ironic accessory.
I think back in 1995, mine was a Winnie the Pooh purse, so
yeah.
I get it.
Now, that will be the last time her father will see her. 3 days later, Nicole's Mickey Mouse backpack will be found shoved under the sink at an efficiency apartment in a rundown motel. But Nicole is nowhere to be found. Now, Vanessa, before we go much further, I just want to issue a content warning for this episode. Here, again, as She Goes By Jane, we talk a lot about tough issues and how they intersect with missing persons cases. But Nicole's story is particularly brutal, and it does include intimate partner violence.
I mean... Yeah, so it's brutal, intimate partner violence, and we are also talking about a 16-year-old child.
Yeah.
It's just everything bad that can be bad, right?
Yeah, it's like the intersection of a lot of things that are particularly triggering for you, so.
Yeah. Hopefully for most people.
Yes.
But definitely the age factor and the intimate partner thing is troubling.
Now, Nicole, she's just a few years older than me, so I recognize her in, like, so many of my friends from that time. Like, she was a true 90s kid, to be honest.
She's my age, right?
It would be 46 right now. So
same.
Now,
so she is my age.
Yeah. Now, Nicole, she's the oldest child of Donna and Frank, and her family had moved from Union City to Brick, New Jersey when Nicole was just 18 months old. They wanted to escape the threat of crime, and Brick seemed like a good fit for them. By the time Nicole was a teenager, they were actually a family of five, although there was a big age gap between the kids. It's a pretty wide age gap.
Mm-hmm.
Nicole, she would be 15 by the time her youngest brother, I believe, was born, so... And her father, he was an aircraft mechanic, although he was on permanent disability, and her mom worked as a sorter at the Ocean County Recycling Facility in Lockwood. And Nicole, well, she made their house a popular destination for all of her friends. That's likely because the teenager was well-liked. Her father said, Nikki would do anything for anybody. Instead of worrying about herself, she would help other kids. This is likely what drove people to their home. Like, her father said she was like the mayor of Shore Acres. By late 1994, Nicole had actually undergone some transitions. That summer, she'd had surgery for scoliosis, which meant having a steel rod inserted in her spine.
My sister has had that surgery.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't personally know what that feels like, but I've witnessed it. And one of my close friends in high school had it as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a little thing to recover from.
No. So she had that happen.
That's major.
Right. The other thing that's going on for her is she has little interest in school. Her father said, in his words, she's a smart kid, but you'd never know it from her grades. So it's not surprising that to her, school attendance was a bit patchy. Her friend Candace said, I used to cut classes with her and hang out in the bathroom and smoke cigarettes. By that November, Nicole, she asked her parents if she could drop out of school, and they apparently reluctantly consented. They knew Nicole was someone who just wanted to do things her own way rather than following a sort of a prescribed route. So while her friends were still getting ready for the school day, Nicole was working at Chuck E. Cheese, even though her dream was to become an auto mechanic. But the other big thing happened in Nicole's life was her breakup with her boyfriend, Brian. Brian lived in New York City, but he actually spent the weekends at his aunt's house in Brick. And the two had dated for 2 years, but that November, their relationship also ended. They still managed to be friends, but the breakup hadn't been easy.
And he's obviously not the partner involved in...
No.
No.
No. Because Nicole, she meets someone else. Now, there's two versions of where the two really connect. One is at a pool hall where their local teens tended to hang out. And the other, like, he served as a driver for a New Year's Eve trip to New York City to ring in 1995 from Times Square. Whichever was the case, the two likely knew each other only in a friend of a friend kind of way. Because though they'd attended the same high school, he was actually 3 years older than Nicole, which meant their paths didn't cross much. Still, most sources agree that the two started hanging out more often at the start of 1995. So much so that he ate a lot of meals at her parents' house. And Nicole's parents, they liked him. They seemed to like him for Nicole as well. He was older and lived on his own, sure, but Nicole didn't actually fit into the mold of your kind of typical teenager. And he seemed to treat her really well. And honestly, they might have felt badly for him. His mom lived out of state and his dad had been murdered in 1987 when this guy was just a kid in what cops had started calling a gangland-style killing in New York City. But by the end of April, the two were officially a couple. Nicole had started taking GED classes at the urging of her contact at the Ocean County Private Industry Council, where she'd taken vocational classes before. They encouraged her to focus on that so that she could move forward with her career goals. So Nicole's new boyfriend and her dad ferried her to and from her classes. Her dad, Frank, he was thankful for it. It was a shared task in making sure that Nicole was able to pursue her dreams. On March 11th, the two attended a local St. Patrick's Day celebration in Seaside Heights and then spent some time at Nicole's house. But Brian stopped by. Brian's the ex, remember?
Mm-hmm.
Now, Nicole's new boyfriend, L, as we're now going to refer to him, agreed that he'd give them some time to hang out without him. L left Nicole's house, and then Brian and Nicole prepared to go on a walk together. Nicole's mother, who'd been home at the time, knew Elle had agreed to leave the two to talk, which is why when she left to go pick up her husband, she was surprised to see him headed back towards the house. There's not going to be any trouble here, right? She recalled asking him, but Nicole stepped in. She assured her mom that everything was fine, and eventually Nicole and Brian were actually able to go on their walk without accompaniment. Now, it's not clear what was said on that walk, but it's clear that Brian didn't just want to stay friends with Nicole. So maybe it was the fact that she was dating someone else, or maybe he just realized how much he missed her, but he wanted Nicole back in his life. By the time Nicole returned home, she felt reasonably confident that she wanted to be with Brian. After all, he'd been a very central figure in her life.
Okay. Which obviously she's made the right choice, but...
But I'm referring to her new boyfriend by the initial
right.
L.
So choosing Brian was the right choice, but is this what's triggering L?
Well, yeah. So, okay. So for new listeners, we're using the initial L because we don't use perpetrator names. Mm-hmm. So anytime that it's just an initial, it's very clear who a perpetrator might be or a person of interest in a case, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, this is not going over mm-mm. well with L because like he can tell something's up, right?
Right.
So when Nicole and Brian come back from their walk, like she is likely to have been surprised to find Elle just like sitting in her driveway waiting for her, despite the fact that he said that he would give her time with Brian, right? Now, she took her mom into the bathroom and shut the door, and there she burst into tears. She loved Brian, but she had just started this new relationship with Elle. I'm pretty mixed up, she told her mom.
Mm-hmm.
She asked her mom to actually go out and maybe be the person to tell Elle that she needed a few days to think about what she wanted. Like she needed him to back off a bit so she could have some time to think. But instead, when her mom left the bathroom, he actually forced his way in and the two got into an argument. And eventually this argument spilled over to her bedroom where they continued to argue. Now, after a while, he left, but he kept calling the house, though Nicole refused to answer. And finally, at 11:30 p.m., she's just tired of it, the incessant calling, so she picks up the phone, listens to what he says, and then just hangs up. And she relays to her mom that he had told her, you know, he says he just can't sleep without me there.
Okay. And to be clear, she's 16 and he's 19, right?
Yes.
Yikes. Okay.
Now, the next day, he actually returns to her house, and he asks her if she would still go to his mom's later that afternoon as they had planned. She didn't really want to go. She'd already said that she needed some space, but her mom encouraged her to head to Long Island. She kind of thought that because Nicole had made a commitment and his mom was expecting her, Nicole should keep her commitment. So Nicole agreed and Elle left. Before they headed to Long Island, though, things got more tense. Now, because it was Sunday and Brian was only in Brick on the weekends, he stopped by again to see Nicole after Elle had left. Brian and Nicole, they headed out on another walk, and this time they held hands along the way. It was likely easy for her to start to see how they could start up again and have a relationship together. But then a car approached them from behind. It was Elle, and he ordered Brian to get into the car. The two apparently took a short drive, leaving Nicole behind. Now, in the car, what Brian says happened is that Elle warned him to stay away from Nicole, that Brian needed to back off because now Elle and Nicole were together. But Brian wasn't having any of that. He said, "It's not my decision, it's Nicole's." Not liking this answer, Elle asked Brian if he wanted to fight, but Brian just said, "I don't have a problem with you." And he got out of the car when they pulled to a stop back where they had left Nicole.
How old is Brian? Just curiosity.
I'm not sure. I get the impression that he was like in the same age range as Nicole.
So closer to 16?
I think, yeah.
Okay. He seems like a good kid?
Yeah, I mean, I don't get...
I don't know, but like he seems to, by not fighting that guy...
Yeah, he was like, no.
No.
No. Now, when Brian got out, he was just likely over Elle, but Nicole actually went to speak with him briefly, and then Elle left. After, as Nicole and Brian walked back to his aunt's house, Nicole told Brian that she told Elle that she was breaking up with him, that she had decided that she still wanted to be with Brian. Now, despite all of this, Elle actually still arrived at Nicole's house to pick her up around 2 p.m. And despite her misgivings, she continued to go with the plan to go to Long Island. Her goodbye to her dad that afternoon would be the last one she would make.
Okay, first off, I'm surprised that she went anywhere with him, but also, can you remind me again what the Long Island thing is?
Yeah, so despite the fact that Nicole and Elle have been dating for about 2.5 weeks at this point, he really wanted her to meet his mom, and she lived out on Long Island. So the trip, they'd been talking about taking this trip for a week of their dating, and it was to go out and meet his mom.
But it's only been 2 weeks, and she just broke up with him.
Right. So that's why her mom had been like, well, you made a commitment, you should keep your commitment, and this woman is now expecting you.
I'm not saying anything about her mom, but I would not have.
Yeah, so
I would not have given the same advice.
So this is definitely like a different era, different type of realization, and we know what happens to Nicole. So, but yeah, I think.
But her mom regardless, was like even if you thought that the guy was the best guy ever, wouldn't you be like, oh, I don't think it's a great idea to do that, just because now you're in a relationship with Brian. Like, it's not respectful for Brian. yeah. in my opinion, it's better to break the commitment. So-called commitment than to be kind of being weird with your ex when you're trying to get into a new current relationship.
Right. So what I understand and what I believe, and like, I feel so terribly for her mom.
Obviously. Yes, obviously. I'm not saying that what she said was wrong, but it's just like, I think I have the flip side of thinking of what is more of a commitment.
Well, yeah, because I think if you go back to the 90s, right? Mm-hmm. And you start thinking about the culture of the 90s, particularly for women, and it was very much like, be nice, don't upset people, mm-hmm. keep your commitments, et cetera, et cetera. Like, how many times, remember, Oprah had to do how many shows telling women to trust their intuition, mm-hmm. right? Because, like, we weren't.
Right. So I was raised in a household where I was told to speak up, and I still think I was overly polite. Like, looking back.
Yeah.
Like, even with my parents constantly telling me, like, do what you need to do, mm-hmm. I think I still, just because of, like, the culture.
Right.
You don't want to be that one sticking out as kind of like the girl that's always going against everything,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So I get it.
Yeah. Now, when Nicole left, so things are going to get complicated here. There's a lot of names and situations happening. But when Nicole left, she told her dad she would give him a call if she decided to stay overnight. The next day, when Nicole's still not being home and she hadn't called, her dad was worried. First, he thinks it's possible that she could have been like running behind and just ended up driving back from Long Island that morning and maybe went to her classes. So he called the school to see if she was there. She wasn't. Next, he looked through Nicole's address book and found Elle's beeper number, because it's the 90s and people had beepers.
Yeah.
So this was written inside her address book. So he called that, and a few minutes later, Elle called back. Elle, too, he was concerned that Nicole wasn't home. He said that the night before, she'd asked to be dropped off in Brooklyn so that she could pick up her pager that she'd left with Brian. Elle said that he'd actually left her at 93rd Street and 7th Avenue at around 9:30 p.m., she was supposed to text him when she was ready to be picked up, but he said she never did. Now, Nicole's father, he's trying to piece together exactly where his daughter was. And he's now realizing that Elle left her in, like, the city at night. Mm-hmm. So he presses Elle. He asks Elle how could you leave her alone in the city like that at night? But then Elle has a confession. He says the two actually had gotten into an argument in the car about her wanting to see Brian, and that she'd gotten out of the car and then she took her radio and her clothes and her arms and just left. Now, Nicole's dad, he specifically asked if she had her backpack with her, since she's using this as her purse. This has all of her essentials in it. But Elle said he thought she might have left it back at his place. Now, he sounded apologetic. He's now realizing that he could have left Nicole in a bad situation. So he was in Long Island, and he decided to return to his mom's after Nicole left. But he asked her, did her dad want him to go back to New Jersey to help him look for her? And Nicole's father, he said he'd welcome the help. So now, knowing that Brian should have been with Nicole, her dad called Brian's beeper. Like Elle, he returned the call right away. And Nicole's father told Brian that Elle had dropped Nicole off near his place the night before, and he was worried that no one had heard from her. But Brian said Nicole hadn't been to his place that night, and he hadn't heard from her either. But he too was worried that something could have happened to her after Elle dropped her off. So Brian said that he and his family would start looking in Brooklyn, like scouring Brooklyn for her. Now, Nicole's family was probably just realizing that something was very wrong. Mm-hmm. Now, by Monday at 6 p.m., they reported her missing to the Brick Township Police Department. Their contact there, Detective John Bender, jotted down what Nicole's father, Frank, had said to say. So he's taking notes. In their earlier conversation, Elle had told Nicole's dad that after Nicole and Elle had left the Russo house, they'd gone to his apartment and then to his place of work, which was a car dealership. So there, they picked up a van. He was going to use it to help move some furniture. And Nicole's father told Detective Bender about something that was just like nagging him, that Elle had told him that Nicole left her purse behind, but he seemed that said like that was really odd for her because she never went anywhere without it. Now, following the easiest route, Detective Bender used Elle's beeper number to contact him. And like Nicole's father, Bender got a call back right away, and Elle told him the same story that he told Frank, Nicole's dad. He also provided his home address in Seaside Park. Next, Bender called the Seaside Park police and gave them this address he was given, but he was told it was made up.
We'll be back in a moment.
So Elle's really good at lying, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, there wasn't anything there, right? So Bender calls Nicole's dad back, and he's just trying to figure out where Elle lived, right? Now, hearing this, Nicole's dad took matters into his own hands, which we often see with parents. Mm-hmm. Right? Contacting some of Nicole's friends, he was able to get an address of a place where Elle might be staying. Once there, he spoke to a manager who was on site, and he was directed to the Parkside Motel, which was around the corner. It's a rather run-down old motel building that had been converted into efficiency apartments. Passing by one of the windows of the Parkside, her father looked in and recognized the St. Paddy's Day stickers Nicole had collected only a few days before at the annual celebration. They were sitting in the window. And this was confirmation enough for Frank to give Detective Bender what he thought was Elle's address. By the time Bender arrived at the motel, Bender already decided a lot about Nicole's disappearance. He was pretty certain she was a runaway.
Mm-mm.
And that it was likely, given her romantic entanglements, that she was just staying with her boyfriend. She was just staying at Elle's place and didn't want to tell her parents. After all, her own father had called her lovesick and confused in their initial conversation together.
Okay. She can be lovesick and confused and not run away.
Yeah.
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 Okay.
Now, Bender's first contact at the motel was the actual owner, William Hansen, who had known Elle since 1992, so a good 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
He'd been renting by the week from Hansen, paying $110 a week, and he just moved from one of his other buildings over to the Parkside earlier that month. It was a Sunday through Saturday rental, and though it was now Wednesday, Elle hadn't paid his weekly rent. This wasn't actually unusual for Elle. He was often late, but he was always good for the payment. Now, Bender and Hansen went to the unit, and they were joined by a maintenance worker to help Bender enter the room. Because even though Bender thought Nicole was missing voluntarily, Elle was actually an adult, and harboring a runaway teen is a problem in itself, right?
Even in the 90s.
Yes. Now, when the maintenance worker opens the door, it's in disarray. A 9-foot by 10-foot section of the carpet and carpet pad was cut out and missing, as were the couch cushions. Taking it all in, Hansen, the owner, tried to rationalize the unusual sight. Elle had talked about hating the carpet, after all.
Mm.
Now, glancing around, Bender actually noted that there's a woman's blouse and pants on the couch, as well as some school books with Nicole's name on it on the table. That must have been what she'd been using to study for her GED. And there, stuffed under the vanity, was Nicole's Mickey Mouse backpack, the one her father said that she never went anywhere without.
It's like everything's so obvious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, despite the fact that seems pretty obvious.
It's super obvious. We're cutting out carpet pad.
Mm-hmm.
Her stuff is there. Couch cushions missing. Yeah. Obvious.
Now, does...
Despite? You're still going to say despite, though, right?
I am.
Oh, no. Okay.
Because despite that, go ahead. Bender still thought that they could be dealing with a runaway.
So no!
He left.
No!
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Now, he does come back later to the Parkside, later that evening, and he's just hoping to run into Nicole, like their paths will cross, right?
But the carpet.
Right.
The cushions. Her stuff. Is Bender still alive?
I don't know.
Can we write him a letter?
Like, some concerns here. Now, he goes to the Parkside. He's hoping to run into Nicole. Who he runs into is a man named Robert. And what Robert had to say changed everything. Now, Robert, he said he'd only seen Nicole a few times before. One was on March 6th when she'd help Elle move into the efficiency apartment, which was next door to Robert. He also saw her around 5 p.m. the same day she disappeared. He said he saw her and Elle drive up in Elle's Subaru, and Robert's description of Nicole's clothing was close enough to match that this was confirmed. Now, Robert was waiting for some friends, so he had been sitting on a bench outside his apartment, which actually happened to be almost directly beneath Elle's window. With his head against the wall, he said he could hear muffled voices inside. A few minutes later, he said Elle came out of the apartment and asked Robert how he was doing before he went back in and then immediately emerged again. Elle then walked around the corner to the 7-Eleven. Robert said it was strange because even though it was only 40 to 45 degrees outside, Elle was wearing an open flannel shirt, ripped jeans, and didn't have on any shoes or socks.
Okay.
Now, Robert said that he looked around the corner and Elle had actually gone into the 7-Eleven and came back out with a bag and returned to his apartment. Now, Robert, he grows tired of waiting for his friends, so he goes back inside his own unit and then later on decides to head to the 7-Eleven himself to get some painkillers for a headache. He said at that point he actually passed by Elle, who was using the payphone outside the store. Again, Robert thought this was odd because Elle had a phone in his own apartment, plus he was now shirtless, shoeless, and had changed his jeans. Robert saw Elle slam down the phone and then walk away. Later that evening, around 9 p.m., Robert heard a thud on the adjoining wall between their apartments and then another one a short while later. He then witnessed Elle go to the van parked out front and open the door of the van. Going into the apartment, Elle came back out carrying a large roll of carpet over his shoulder. He then drove away.
This is like the most obvious anything that's ever happened.
Yeah.
Elle wasn't even trying.
Well.
And Bender? Like, come on.
Right. I mean, thankfully, Robert was like, I saw the whole thing.
Yeah.
Now, Bender, he's likely quickly going over the timeline in his head because Elle had told him and Nicole's father that he'd left her in Brooklyn at 9:30 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
But Robert was adamant that Elle had been at his apartment at that time. And just as quickly, Bender likely realized that Nicole had not run away.
Good for Bender. He finally caught up.
Yeah. Now, this time, when Bender called Elle's beeper, he got no response. So instead, he placed a call to the Major Crimes Unit of the Ocean County Prosecutor's Office. With search warrants in hand, investigators began combing over the apartment. They found some of Nicole's clothes and blood stains on the couch. They also found blood on the bed frame, a chair, a bureau, the door frame. But the real story became more apparent after Jeffrey Thompson of the Ocean County Sheriff's Department sprayed luminol in the apartment. Now, luminol reacts to oxidizing compounds in blood, causing some to light up in a darkened room. And after investigators could see that blood had been on the lower portion of the front door, the side of the television, the floor near the couch, and the kitchen and bathroom floors. Circular motions in those rooms indicated that it was likely there had been a lot of blood that had been cleaned up.
Do we ever find out why there was so much blood?
Yeah.
We're going to get there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Now, the van that Elle had borrowed and that Robert had seen was actually located at Elle's mother's apartment in Long Island. She hadn't seen Elle for days at this point, she said, but the van was still there and it was brought back to New Jersey for evidence processing. They did not find blood in the vehicle. They did find carpet fibers, but those were too common to be fully conclusive. On March 17th, though, the evidence that something had happened to Nicole was quite strong, so police issued a warrant for Elle's arrest. It would be days before he was found. What happens next does center on Elle, not Nicole, but it's necessary to understand the full picture of what likely happened that weekend. So on the morning that Nicole went missing, Elle placed a call. So we have to go back in time. So this is the morning she went missing. Elle placed a call to a young woman named Susan. Susan had dated Elle for a little less than a year in 1992 and 1993. Susan, wary of Elle and no longer involved with him, actually began recording the phone call.
Hmm.
She did not trust this guy.
I guess not.
During this call, Elle said that he wanted Susan to come and be with him because he was upset and worried that Nicole might leave him. Susan said he was crying a little, and he said, "Nobody's ever there for me. I don't expect you to be there for me right now either, okay?"
Mm.
Now, Susan, she is not about to go visit Elle. She later described him as controlling and obsessive. Instead, during this call, she encouraged him to give Nicole space, but all Elle could do was complain about how he couldn't sleep the night before without Nicole with him. So Susan, perhaps remembering this obsessiveness, made a remark about how Elle would just feel the same about anybody else, right? Like, because she doesn't want him obsessing about Nicole.
Nicole specifically.
Yeah, but he insisted Nicole was special. The call to Susan wouldn't be the only one he would make. Now, Robert, remember, his next-door neighbor had said that Al was on the payphone and slammed it down when he saw him that evening. Mm-hmm. That call had actually been to Al's friend, Bob, but Bob's brother, Anthony, had been the one to pick up. Anthony would later say that it sounded like Al was crying, and Anthony asked if he could help. Al said only that he'd done something bad but couldn't talk about it. Before hanging up, he said, "I just want to die." Later, on March 13th, nearly 48 hours after Nicole went missing, what we now know is that Al actually showed up at his younger sister's school. She would later recount how he asked her to go with him, something she was reluctant to do. She didn't want to leave school with him, but he insisted. Once in the car with him, he told her his plan was to steal a car. And his plan was to go hit up some private car sales, like people selling their own cars, and then simply leave with the car if anyone let him test drive it alone. With this, they were actually unsuccessful. Nobody was letting them drive the car on their own until they hit up a car dealership where he left the lot in a Cadillac. And then he drove to a parking lot and switched the plates with his Subaru. And he left the maroon Subaru behind. It's a little bit unclear where he went from there, but we do know that on March 17th, Al placed a call to his uncle's home in Connecticut. His uncle Bernard wasn't home, but his aunt Nancy answered. He asked her to pick him up from the train station because he was in deep trouble. When she asked why, he pushed off answering, but when she got him, he told her that his girlfriend was missing in Brooklyn and that for some reason people suspected that he had something to do with it, so he had to get out of town. But he assured Nancy that he had not done anything wrong. By the time Bernard got home, Nancy had to have been desperate to talk to him. So she greeted Bernard at the door, and Nancy quickly relayed what she'd been told by Elle and then cautioned him that she didn't believe him. Now, when Bernard and Elle spoke, he first said the same story that he told Nancy, but then he'd asked to speak to Bernard alone. In the living room, Elle told Bernard that he had a fight with Nicole and that he'd hit her in the head 6 or 7 times with a crowbar. When Bernard asked if Nicole was dead, Elle said yes, and he was sure of it because he'd gone back and slit her throat.
Yikes.
Yeah. And he was confident, though, you're going to love this because the everything being so obvious. He was confident, though, that he wouldn't get caught because he cleaned up the blood. But he did admit that he messed up by leaving one of his shirts behind.
He didn't really clean up all the blood.
No.
Also, cutting out your carpet.
And carpet pad.
And carpet pad and throwing out your cushions is not cleaning up the blood.
No.
Okay.
Now, he also said that he'd wrapped Nicole's body in 6 or 7 garbage bags and then drove to Long Island where he placed her body in a dumpster. Now, terrified for his own teenage daughter's safety, Bernard gave Elle $200 and told him to leave. And then as soon as Elle was out of sight, Bernard and Nancy called their lawyer who contacted the New Jersey police. Meanwhile, Elle fled. I'm not going to go too much into him, but he was picked up in California at LAX where he'd gone to pick up a ticket that was purchased under an alias he was using because he also happened to have stolen his high school classmate's identity. This is weird because in my research this week, I came across basically the same version of this, but a different person.
Really? Yeah. Are we going to be covering?
Yes, we are.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So people will get to hear that weirdness later. But yeah, so he stole his high school classmate's identity,
so strange.
Tried to get a plane ticket, etc. Right. When he was arrested, he was actually on the phone with his mom. Now, on the way back to New Jersey, because he gets extradited back to New Jersey, Elle said to the officer, whose name was Hayes, who was transporting him, he said, "I'm going to be 49 years old when I get out of jail for this." Hayes told him to be quiet, but Elle asked if there was any chance a person convicted of murder would do less than 30 years in the state of New Jersey. In April of 1996, a little more than a year after Nicole went missing, a probable cause hearing was held in New Jersey to determine if a trial would move forward for murder. The Superior Court judge stated, "Based on the evidence here today, I'm satisfied there's probable cause to believe that a crime of homicide was committed in Ocean County." Now, before he went to trial, Al was offered a plea deal to avoid a harsher sentence if convicted. He refused. "I didn't commit the crime," he said. I don't know where Nicole Russo is. Even if it was probation, I'd turn it down.
But he'd already told several people he did this.
Huh. Okay. Don't worry. He's trying to solve that.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Oh. No. Oh, no. Okay. He's on it.
Now, when the trial began, Frank and Donna, Nicole's parents, were the first witnesses called to the stand. And the prosecutor asked Donna, did you have anything to do with Nicole going to Long Island? To which Donna replied, I told her she made a promise and she should keep it. And so sometimes, Vanessa, we get notes from family members of the missing. So I just wanted to add here, in case it reaches the right ears, like, you could not have known that this would happen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, during the trial, the defense tried to malign Nicole. They painted her as depressed and out-of-control teen, largely because she'd been in a crisis intervention center when she was 13 years old, and because she was prescribed medication her dad freely admitted that she didn't want any part of. Now, also pivotal were the statements that Bernard, Elle's uncle, had made. Providing any testimony in this trial had to have been terrifying, because something I have not mentioned yet is that while awaiting trial, Elle attempted to hire his cellmate to murder his uncle and to prevent him from testifying.
Oh, wow. So he went to extreme measures to try to cover up.
Yep. Now, he felt that if this didn't work, one of his plans would be to have his cousin, Bernard's teenage daughter, murdered as a way to compel Bernard to keep quiet.
Wow. He's really, like... I can't believe that they're actually saying that because she was depressed. Like, what does that have to do with anything?
Yeah.
Ugh. This whole thing is just awful.
Well, so thankfully, his cellmate wore a wire.
Okay.
He was able to get details of Elle's plans recorded and then testified about the experience during the trial. The cellmate had asked Elle why Elle was worried about Bernard testifying if Elle hadn't killed Nicole. But Elle confessed then that he had. He said he was mad at her, and in his words, she made him kill her. He seemed to be angry that she was refusing to have sex with him. And later, he included details about dismembering Nicole and placing her body in trash bags. Though he told his uncle he had placed her in a dumpster, he told his cellmate he had buried her where she could never be found.
And that explains the blood.
Yeah. Now, based on these testimonies, Elle was convicted to life in prison with a mandatory 30-year period of parole ineligibility in Nicole's murder. He was also sentenced for attempted murder and conspiracy. Those for Bernard. And those included a 40-year period of parole ineligibility. Since that time, he has actually brought multiple requests for relief before the courts and also alleged ineffective counsel, including that a plea bargain was not presented to him.
But one was offered to him.
Yeah, so we rewind a little bit. Basically, he had said he was offered it before he went to trial, and he had said no, he had nothing to do with it, and he wouldn't even take probation. That's how certain he was.
Okay, and yeah. Now he's changing his tune.
Yeah. The latest of these actually happened in April of this year, so for the most part, his attempts are very scattered and confusing. In one attempt, the judges said his claims were contradictory and that they would have to suspend common sense to consider them, since he had said alternately that it was a classic love triangle gone wrong, but also that she had committed suicide and that he panicked. And also that if he had just been able to testify in front of a jury, he would have been found innocent.
It's a lot of alsos.
Yeah. Now, all kind of underlaying this is that he is now 49 years old, and that's the age that he thought he would be when he would be able to get out of prison.
Is he out?
No.
Good.
So, yeah. Now, if Nicole, if she were alive today, she would be 46 years old. She would have been able to continue her GED classes, maybe continue her relationship with Brian, maybe not. She could have fulfilled her dream of being an auto mechanic. Now, Nicole's story is one where there's a very large degree of confidence and evidence backing up what happened to her. Days after she went missing, her mom and dad visited the site where she lost her life, and they placed flowers outside of Unit 2 at the parkside. 1 year later, her mom said, "We didn't know you could cry every day for a whole year." Though an in-depth search of landfills had been conducted, the stark reality was that Long Island's they incinerated their trash, meaning if Nicole had been placed in a dumpster, it would likely mean the same for her. Still, they were hopeful that they would at least be able to find the steel rod that had been inserted in Nicole's spine the year before, but their search was unsuccessful. Her parents kept Nicole's room the same, and without the ability to bury Nicole, it actually became a place for Nicole's family and friends to go and think of her. Her mother said, "That's the only place we have to go. There's no closure for us." Over a year after she disappeared, Nicole's belongings had been much the same when a reporter visited the family. The dresser held a green shamrock sticker from the St. Patrick's Day parade she'd gone to with Elle the day before she disappeared. A 1960s hat rested nearby. And because she loved poetry, scrawled on the mirror in her own script were some lines of poetry taken from Langston Hughes. It read, "Hold fast to dreams, for if they die, life is like a broken-winged bird who cannot fly."
We are now going to listen to Amy's poem, Hold Fast, read by Elisa Donovan. Elisa is part of multiple iconic pop culture phenomenons. She began her film career originating the role of Amber in Clueless. She followed that up with a turn on another pop culture sensation, the television series Beverly Hills 90210, playing bad girl Ginger LaMonica. Then, after reprising her role of Amber for 3 seasons on the television series of Clueless, and shooting A Night at the Roxbury, she went on to the monster hit series Sabrina the Teenage Witch, playing Morgan Cavanaugh. She has also had recurring roles on multiple other TV series and has starred in numerous telefilms. As a celebrity mom blogger for People.com, Elisa was voted reader favorite for her hilarious and heartwarming blogs on being a new mother. She was also hand-selected by Sheryl Sandberg to be the voice of her number one bestsellers, Lean In and Option B. Elisa's first book, Wake Me When You Leave, was released by Llewellyn Worldwide in North America and sold out on Amazon on the first day. Currently, Wake Me When You Leave is in development as a film, which Elisa has written the screenplay for and will be her directorial debut. She lives in San Francisco with her husband and their 12-year-old daughter.
Hold Fast. Nicole Russo, 16. Missing since March 12, 1995, from Brick, New Jersey. At night, every constellation knows to hold fast to the night sky, long enough for the prophets to predict our fortunes. The teacups swirl, leaves are red, somewhere bones are scattered across the ground, and in them, we see danger. Here, reach for our hands. Let us pull you back. Each time, we watch the film flicker as you get back into the car. Each time we whisper, "Don't." We hold fast to our belief that we can still stop the danger you're hurtling towards, as though we could predict we would live a lifetime with you scattered into the dark. What we need for you leaves everything wanting. Every spring, leaves unfurling are a reminder that time will never move back. To afternoons smoking in the girls' bathroom, ash scattered across the tile. In every graduation song, they sing, "Hold fast to memories." A cliche you'd find amusing, but predict a future where that's all that's left. Because danger is the sound of a man asking you for a date. Danger is the sound of a van door rolling shut as it leaves from a motel room. We are trained to predict the chances of attack. Strangers who will grab the back of our hair, the men we will fight against as we hold fast to our will to survive that moment, our keys scattered across the pavement of some dark parking lot, scattered like we used to do when someone shouted, "Run!" The danger is next to you at the table, hands you a cigarette that you hold fast in your small hand. The danger kisses you goodnight, leaves you at your front door after a date, sends you back home at night, and calls the next day. How can you predict the hand holding yours will bring your end? Instead, we predict the journey of the sun across the sky, the scattered petals of the apple trees, the pathway back to your childhood bedroom where no danger should find you. If only we could predict that he leaves, shuts the door, and moves on. Hold fast. But if we could predict this moment, the danger would step back into darkness. He'd leave our scattered hearts beating. Hold fast.
For more information about our show or to check out other shows on the network, please visit evergreenpodcast.com. Bye, Vanessa.
Bye, Amy.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.